The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
There's a girl, she's a star. She's got style, Steffi Star. You see her face around the town. She's popular, Steffi Star.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Weinstein.
And I'm Meredith Keach.
And we are realtors. We have a big real estate team. There's 11 of us in Easton, and we sell all over. We sell all over the world.
And we sold Suzanne Bump a house, and
yes,
she is here with us today.
We did. Oh, my God. That was so exciting.
A former state auditor, state rep, labor and workforce.
Secretary. That's right. With Jabal Patrick. Yeah. Yeah. No. And I am so happy in that home. You really knew what I needed and steered me in the right direction.
Yeah. We really do.
We don't use the term steering, Suzanne.
Right. We don't want to get in trouble.
That's fair housing.
Yes. No. Fair housing. We can't say
directive, maybe.
You found the right home for me.
You said, I want a water view.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I want a nice yard.
Yeah.
I want to be in Easton. Oh, yeah. I want to walk to town.
Yeah. Yes, I did. I did. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Being in this little village setting was really important to me.
Yes.
Well, my husband and I had a home in Great Barrington, and we were in Housatonic, which is the little village in the northern end of Great Barrington out in the Berkshires. And I just wanted to have that. I wanted to be able to walk out and meet my neighbors and buy a newspaper. Not that I frankly do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you get the idea. You know,
walk
to a coffee shop and,
and
just have that feeling. I just love that, being able to, you know, see people on the street and have, you know, neighborly conversations.
Yes.
So I'm really happy in Easton. They're wonderful people. It's not just the location and the historic buildings, though I also really
But you are in the best location.
Yeah. Oh, I am.
Surrounded by all the historic buildings.
Yes.
Well, there's a movement back towards that traditional New England center with combination of retail, residential, commercial.
Yeah.
That's smart growth. Doug King has got a couple of them.
Yeah, and it really contributes to a sense of community.
Yes.
You want a gathering place.
Yes.
A couple of focal points of activity. And
So
that's how, you know, I haven't lived in this area since I grew up in the town of Whitman. So I was 20 years in Whitman and 20 years in Braintree, roughly speaking, and then 20 years in the Berkshires, and now I'm here. So I'll finish out my last 20 years
in Easton.
In Easton.
Yeah.
And you have a truly special spot, though.
Yeah.
You know, I do love that neighborhood feel. So I have a listing right now in Milton, but all the neighbors have been coming in, introducing themselves, saying, this is the greatest neighborhood. We all watch out for each other.
Yeah.
We have a walk-in club in the morning at 7 a.m., all the women. I'm like, I love this.
Yes.
I want to buy this house.
No, it's great. And the Y, I can walk to the Y. You know, I have an exercise class now.
Yes.
I'm really...
Now that I'm in retirement.
Girl.
You know, that's the neat thing about our business too, is I think of that when I'm kind of starstruck with someone, or
like Suzanne.
Or like a doctor. Like I hold them in such high esteem, and I think, oh my God, and I kind of shrink a little bit. But then I say, they need a house too. And I'm curious what they like for housing. Do they like walkability? Do they want to be on the outskirts? Where do they want to be? Do they want to be in the city? And what's their house like? And where do they want the sun to rise and set? All that is such individual for absolutely every one of us, which is pretty neat.
Well, Easton has done such a great job, and this, I really appreciate this, of preserving open spaces and architectural features, the historical features. It really kind of called to me. I remember, I the memory before I came to Easton to live, the only memory I had of Easton was as a kid seeing the Oaks Ames Hall. And that just made, I really appreciate architecture and art and all. And it just made a lasting impression on me. And whenever I found that I could live near Oaks Ames Hall, well, that was the that was it. Yeah. I didn't even have to go into my house before I knew I wanted to buy it.
I was there last night.
You were?
Yes, I was at an event for UNICEF. And Wild Dahlia, she gave us a tutorial on flower arranging. So I came home with a centerpiece for Thanksgiving, and wow, it's beautiful. The flowers, I mean, I'd like to think it was what I did, but it's not. It was the flowers that she chose. And I learned a whole bunch too, but
She did a demonstration for the garden club, and although I'm not a member, it was open to everybody, so I went. And what she was able to do with individual flowers to really bring out the beauty, you know, by manipulating the petals, really opening them up.
That's what I learned last night. I had no idea.
No, what she was able to do with tulips and also roses. Oh, you can understand why she's in such demand. The artistry.
I've seen that on Instagram.
Oh, you have?
You have.
I was
floored. Trying to get Susanna on Instagram?
I am trying to get Susanna on Instagram. We're going to set up an account for her.
Somebody has to help me.
We've got
to
get you set
Adam.
Up. Adam, please.
Adam's our tech guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll get you started.
Yeah.
So, you were at Oak Ames last night.
Yes.
Last time I was there was for a rockin' party.
Upstairs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, it was upstairs.
Yeah, it was really
Neat. You know, the Lions Club is doing another rocking party on the first Friday of December, which kicks off the holiday festival up at Oaks Ames Hall.
Yeah.
We're having a local group called Divas. Divas with a Twist.
I love
that. They're
sounds five, like Meredith and I.
Five gals. Yep. Great voices. Oh, wide repertoire.
I love it.
Great dance band. I saw them. Down,
I want to go.
I saw them down in Taunton at a venue called the District. It's the former District Court House down there, and now it's a performance venue. And I saw Divas
Will you walk
with
home?
A Twist? Probably.
Yeah,
because I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to, you know, leave the parking for people who really need it. Coming from a distance.
Oh, true. Will they shuttle from the parking lot behind Farmer's Daughter?
I don't think so. But that may be a good idea. I'll have to ask the planners.
I mean, you guys are hooting it up for late night.
Yeah.
Right.
When is the date? December 1st?
See, the first.
I think
second,
it's the
right?
first. First. Oh, it's the first. If it's the first Friday.
Next week.
Next Friday. Will ECAP be there, Adam? Yeah. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, they did a great concert last year that I was involved with, again, to kick off the holiday weekend, and it was Tom Rush.
I heard that.
I mean, you have to be of a certain age, like me,
to
remember Tom Rush. But he has an amazing following, and people were coming from all over hear Tom Rush.
Yeah, it was a big to-do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was part of the modern folk era and played a lot in Cambridge and really got a lot of other young artists started. He still does that. And he's wonderful. He's no kid, but he is he's just a great human being as well as a terrific songwriter and performer.
And so for the event Friday night, will they have food and drinks? Or is it just a concert?
Yes. No, there will be refreshments.
Oh, we love a snack.
Yeah. No doubt there will be raffles. I mean, we always, it's about the fun, you know, it's about fun, but it's also about fundraising.
Right.
Because the Lions support a wide number of programs in the community. And it's a great group of people. I'm really glad that I was asked to join the club.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
My mom's loved it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's our largest volunteer base in Easton, too.
It is. It is. And so that's why I just, frankly, I tried, you know, well, being the auditor, I'm always interested in efficiency. And I thought, well, I can support all these organizations in town if I just support the Lions Club. Yes. Then I can have some fun while I'm while I'm doing so. So, yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
So we were talking about some of your resume items, so to speak. And I just kept looking at it and thinking, wow, oh my God, wow, she did that. Oh my God, wow. And then I thought, when you approach an audit, first, can you explain what an audit is?
Sure.
In that capacity as state auditor? And then I'd love to talk about your personality and superpowers that make you good at an audit.
Okay, so in Massachusetts, every state, virtually every state, has a position of state auditor. Most of them are appointed by the legislature in their respective states. But in Massachusetts and in other states, we are elected, and everybody's audit functions are different because they're set forth by the statutes in the individual states. And in Massachusetts, what we do, it's not financial auditing. Obviously, we look at how state government is spending money, but we don't look at it just in terms of the balance sheets to make sure that they can account for all of the revenue that they've taken in, because lots of agencies collect fees and fines and the like, or how they are spending money. I mean, we care about that, but really our focus is on performance. Are agencies meeting their mission? Are they following the rules for how they spend money? Are they getting the results that they that are expected of them? So are the programs that they're designing effective? Are people really being helped by them? Are we really building the roads as efficiently as we can? And so those are the questions that we ask when we are conducting an audit. Now there are, my God, I can't even remember how many state agencies there are.
Don't ask me.
I really stepped away. So there are about, I don't know, 200 state departments that we would audit. And every agency would see us about every 3 years. Now, you can't audit the whole of an agency. If you think about just the Department of Public Health, think of all the programs the Department of Public Health, it's all about it's vaccinations and obesity, and it's disease control, and it's a wide range of activities. And so you have to look at where things are most likely to go astray, and it could be actually in a spending area, but you might also ask questions about why is it taking so long to get an approval for something in a particular, in a particular program. And so you're trying to make the most of the resources that you had. So you look at risk. Where's the area of greatest risk that something is not going according to plan? And so that's what we look for in our audits. So it's about compliance, it's about performance, it's about outcomes, it's how well people are serving the public.
And then so you type up this report, and then you take the report and give it to?
We give it to the agencies, obviously, the governor's office. We give it to the legislature because they want to know how the agencies that they're funding and in many cases advocating for within the budget, how well they are performing. Sometimes, there are lots of reasons for agencies not fulfilling their mission or failing. And a lot of times it has to do with the fact that they are under-resourced, that they really don't have the technical skill that they need, that they don't have the IT resources that they need, and it's often a matter of you know, just poor priority setting and management as well. And then we made a point of doing a lot of outreach to groups across the state that have an interest in these state agencies. So particularly, we spend a lot of time on child welfare, and there are lots of child advocacy groups around the state. So we would make sure that they had the audit too. And actually, when we were planning audits, we also reached out to a lot of different advocacy groups to say, where do you see problems? You know, what's your main gripe with this agency? How can we make it work better? And that's the whole thing for me. That's what's motivated me throughout my life in government, is how can we do this better? How can we do this most effectively? How can we build confidence in the in the public that government is capable of delivering services effectively and efficiently, and you know that we really care about the contributions that they make through their taxes, right, to the support of our government. So it's for me, it's always been a matter of public trust, building the public trust.
Right. And did when Suzanne was coming in,
right, were people like,
watch out,
right,
the auditors are always more enthusiastically
hi everyone,
they're pushed out the door than they are welcomed. The goodbyes are always
great working with you. See you in 5 years.
But that was an important thing, maintaining a level of professionalism so that agencies know what to expect when we're coming in, so there's no surprises. We tell them in advance what we're going to be looking at, not necessarily looking for, but looking at. There's a lot of prep that goes into an audit. We don't just show up one day and say, open your books. So it is, and then just maintaining a professional working relationship, just objectivity, efficiency on our part as well, was key to that.
And I know it probably varies, but is your standard audit 2 days, 2 weeks,
months. It takes a long time because we have to follow standards and procedures that are set by the federal government. There are government generally accepted government accounting standards, auditing standards rather, and there are accounting standards as well, but auditing standards in this case, and so they require a lot of documentation of your planning process, how it is that you decided to look at what you looked at, what it is exactly that you're looking at, what are the methods that you're going to use, everything you looked at, everybody you talked to. It is extraordinarily detailed, and the reason is so that the public can have confidence that this was done independently, that nobody was telling you what your findings should be, and that they would reach the same conclusions you did by following the same procedure.
Well, I think it's amazing. I mean, it's the true checks and balances,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, that's it. Right. That's it. It's all about accountability.
Yeah.
It's all about accountability.
We have on a small scale, I'm on the Recreation Commission, and we've hired an independent consultant to take a look at all of the recreation facilities that we have in town. Now, it's not quite a true audit in a sense, but, you know, having been a lifetime citizen here.
Was this your idea, Meredith?
It was not. I can tell you, you know, and they came to me and said, what are we forgetting? You know, which ones? But to see it all mapped out is going to be so exciting.
No, it is. Yeah. It is. The old adage is that, with better information, you make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So that's how I looked at audits, that they should be a tool for making government work better rather than, you know, a weapon to bring,
right,
to bring somebody or something down.
Right.
Yeah.
But it probably could be used for that too.
Well, yeah, sometimes that is indeed the effect, but that's not that's not the mindset that right, you should right, go right, in with. Because right. you've got to be, you know, it's objectivity. It's oh, you're, right. it's that's and we get and
Stephanie's dying.
Because I keep laughing. I keep thinking about, can you imagine if we told the team?
We're being audited.
Just auditing yeah. our real estate team of 11.
Yeah, no, it is
for efficiency.
Yeah,
efficiency. It might be helpful.
Yeah. We really could use it.
Well, we did. We met with a marketing person.
That's true.
Right? To
That's
do
true.
Exactly what you're saying, to right. Right. have someone to give a look, top down look, because when you're just boots on the ground with anything, you're running at a frantic pace. We all are.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. it's hard to be objective. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're just doing things and you don't really know why.
Right. And you don't know, you don't always know where your bottlenecks are. So right. if we're looking at an approval process for an agency, or if we're looking at case management within, you know, complaint resolution with that before the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, and you just delays. Well, why? You know, right. so we mm-hmm. it's hard for folks who are, as you say, occupied with the day-to-day operations to be able to step back and do that root cause analysis and really. So that's what we did. I mean, and I was able to get back to the second half of your question. I was able, I think, to do, I think, a good job. And we've got lots of awards that the agency never received before, you know, and under any of my predecessors. But I really benefited, I think, from the fact that I had been a legislator. So I understood about policy. I understood about constituent needs and, you know, public service. And immediately before, although that was way back in my youth, as I say, I was in the 80s and early 90s that I was in the legislature. But I immediately before I ran, I was in Deval Patrick's cabinet, as you said, labor and workforce development secretary. And there was, so I'd done policy, but now I was doing operations. And we spent in workforce development area, we spend millions and millions of dollars on training programs. You know, we run the unemployment centers, and we make grants to organizations for, you know, for skills enhancement across the whole state and across a wide range of fields of endeavor. I was always asking the questions, well, how do we know who should get this money? How are we assessing right. mm-hmm. outcomes? And I was there during the 2008 recession, when we had, just like during the past, during COVID, we had, you know, oodles of money coming in
right.
to help us, you know, through the recession, when a lot of job loss. And so who are the programs we ought to give this money to? And I was so frustrated that there wasn't good data about outcomes of these services. We could tell you how many people right. entered a program,
yeah.
got resume writing help, or they actually went through a skills training program. We could tell you how many people and how long it took. We couldn't tell you if they were successful in getting jobs, though. And I just thought, we need more information. Somebody has to be in government that's pushing agencies to collect the data that can be used to determine how effectively we are spending money. And that's why I decided to run for auditor.
Steph, I think we need Suzanne.
That
is exactly what we talked about the other day. We're like, we're spending all this money, and right. what's the outcome?
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Yeah. What is yeah. it doing yeah, what for we, us?
What's, you
right?
know, what, you're getting bang yeah. for your buck.
Yeah. Right. It's
yeah.
so
Do you
important.
Have the right people? Do they have the right training? You know, people, a lot of members of the public, and I appreciate why, and occasionally I'm one of them myself, you know, you see something that goes wrong and you just think, well, the people must be really stupid, you know, mm-hmm. how, you know, mm-hmm. or they're corrupt, mm-hmm. That they're not getting, they're not doing a better job. And that's rarely the case, mm-hmm. that it's an individual that kind of went off the rails. There are lots of reasons for agency failures. And I, you know, I hate to say, I mean, which I hate to repeat, which I've already said, a lot of agencies are actually under-resourced because the legislature is very good at identifying needs and passing laws. They're not so good at actually providing the funding that enables agencies to do all of what they're supposed to do. And so they get a new responsibility, and of course they focus on implementing that, and it means that they kind of take their eye off the ball in terms of what they already were doing. And it's hard when the budget is as big as it is for people to appreciate that it's really not always enough money.
Right.
The skills training hasn't been there. As I said, the IT isn't there. The ongoing, the ongoing oversight. Because when there are layoffs in state government, they don't lay off the direct care workers. They lay off the people in the back room. Well, it's the people in the back room that are doing the counting and the oversight for the program implementation. So, government is a pretty complex thing, but it's the principles, as you are seeing, as we're discussing, the principles are applicable everywhere.
Right.
It's not just the public sector where you need this oversight. Goes on in the private sector, and you guys are looking for it too.
So how can we do it better? Came into the agency of auditor. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces that I read was that you made some sweeping changes within that office,
right,
as well. So on sort of a personal level, what was that like to do that? You come in this role to oversee the state auditing, and then you all of a sudden turn towards the office that you're taking over. What was that like to then make dramatic changes there?
Well, I mentioned that we have to audit to government standards, and those standards require that every 3 years, a team of auditors from other states gets assembled by the National Association of State Auditors, and they get sent in, and they audit the auditor's office to ensure that that we are, in fact, meeting government standards, which include staff competency. And so, although it's sort of required, it wasn't being done under my predecessor. And so the first thing I did, in fact, before I even took office, as soon as I got elected, I reached out to the Auditors Association and said, please, send a team in to tell me what I've
inherited.
Right.
What I've inherited. And so as a result of that, there were a lot of changes that were made. There were a lot of staff that hadn't been properly trained. They weren't getting proper oversight. So it meant a lot of personnel changes. It also meant a lot of procedural changes because we weren't auditing to government standards. The office, that doesn't mean the office wasn't doing audit work, and it still was meaningful work. But if the law requires the auditor to audit to government standards, well, I'm a lawyer. I'm going to audit to government standards.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
I want to build that public trust. So there was a lot of work that we did in the first couple of years, in particular, just revamping things. A lot of staff training. A lot of staff training was done. And a lot of other kinds of staff development, because that was really important to me, that people really were happy with their work, that they were, they understood that they were doing work that was meaningful, that they were going to be rewarded for their professional development, because you need those kinds of incentives in order to keep you motivated and engaged. And frankly, there aren't a lot of there was a practical reason for doing it, as well as kind of my altruistic motives there. it's that it's hard to hire people into this work in state government, because if you have these talents, you're going to work for one of the big, you know, work for a much bigger company that's going to pay you a lot more than the state auditor's office is going to. So if you can't give them that money, you've got to make sure that the job is as meaningful and they feel as empowered as they can. And we, you know, created career pathways. So there was a lot of work that we did there. And all that professional development stuff that I did, I mean, that's as important to me as the audits that we did. So we really gave people a lot of opportunity and therefore they worked better.
That sounds like a massive amount of work. I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
I'm speechless. Right?
I mean, yeah,
no, it was
like where you break it down.
Right.
So you've got this whole thing and then you're able to bring it down to these pieces to just to implement all of that. Yeah. It seems like almost overwhelming.
Well, we developed a strategic plan and set priorities, and every decision that we made, and not just me in the auditor's office, but managers got training in this. I mean, every decision that they made was whether it was going to further any of the goals in the strategic plan. So this, which included professional development, and you know, our good use of resources and our you know, communication with the larger community. So I'm really proud of what we did there.
So you come in, you have the auditors come in to audit the auditors, and then they give you a roadmap of sorts.
Yeah, they tell you all of the areas in which you're failing. We're failing in every area that they measured.
Okay.
Then it's up to you, just like when we would do an audit, we would tell you what's wrong. We could give you some suggestions as to areas, you know, like an approach that you should take, mm-hmm. but auditors don't tell you exactly what to do. It's up to you to figure it out. So particularly with the state, not the peer review people, but when we were doing an audit, we couldn't tell an agency exactly how they should solve their problem, because the concern would be that when you go back and audit them a few years later, that you would be assessing the validity of your own, efficacy of your own, you know, of your own mm-hmm. recommendations.
Right.
So again, to keep it completely objective and independent, you follow those rules.
So that's important though, right? Because without this data that you've indicated, you can't, when you meet and say, okay, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? And how can we be better without those data points?
Yeah, you need that.
You can't figure that out.
Yeah, there's another adage, is, you know, you can't manage what you can't measure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So whether it was looking at licensing at the registry, or it was looking at case management at the Department of Children and Families, those were tough audits. The Department of Children and Families. That's an agency that I was really familiar with when I first went to state government, which was right out of college. I was started as an intern, and then I was an aide, and then I got elected. It was called at that time. The big thing was that they were trying to reorganize how we provided support to families and who were going through tough times, and there could have been abuse or neglect in the household, you know. And so at that point they were revamping it. The new thing was it was going to be the Department of Social Services, and they were going to do so much better. And then through all the years that I was in government, social workers were saying, "We need more people. We need more money." And that has just been a constant. The work, and it's not, you've got to recognize that, I mean, the work that they do is becoming harder and harder because of the prevalence of drug abuse.
Oh, right.
And now the folks that are falling into poverty because of income inequality. But the drug abuse is really taking a toll on families, and particularly on kids.
Right.
And kids. And those are really tough roles at the Department of Children and Families. Really tough roles.
Steph, are you speechless?
So...
Steph, like, yes. Meeting out for drinks a little bit better.
Yes. Yeah. This is a lot.
I loved that work. But after 12 years, I just decided to let somebody else do it. We accomplished a lot. In the tools, the focus on IT, I can't talk with any sophistication about IT systems and the like, but I knew we needed to be investing in them. I was able to have, during my tenure, a couple of really good IT people who listened. That's the most important quality in an IT person. It's not them coming in and telling you what you need. It's the staff telling them what they need.
Right.
What are the tools that they need to handle data, to acquire data, to clean it up? Because a lot of agencies, you take raw data and you've got to turn it into something meaningful, so that you can conduct an audit. We spent a lot. The legislature was really good. We got money through the capital budget. The governor's office always supported, even though we crank out these audits to telling whether it was Deval Patrick or Charlie Baker, you're missing the mark here, and this is a waste of money, and this is a waste of time. They always gave us the money to invest in IT that we needed.
Now, what do you do when you have those stressful audits? What does Suzanne Bump do to decompress?
I don't know. What do I do to decompress? Are you asking me like what my hobbies are?
Yeah. What do you do? Right?
Hobbies. Yeah. I'm just acquiring hobbies now that I'm retired. I always love to be outside. When Paul and I, my late husband, when Paul and I had the house in the Berkshires, that was how we managed our stress. We would go out there on weekends. We would throw ourselves into yard work.
Oh,
and one of my particular hobbies out there was building stone walls.
Oh,
I loved, stone wall create, retaining walls to create an overlook. There was a small pond on the property. For an overlook there, and then we created a berm because we were on a fairly busy road, but a berm with a retaining wall and plantings above that. And then I built a stone wall just to build a stone wall in the back.
Is it fair to say that organization and structure are your comfort zone? I mean, why does it not surprise me that you like building stone walls?
I guess you're figuring me out pretty quickly. That was a big deal. We went out there originally because we both were interested in classical music, and we out there because we were going to the Boston Symphony when we were in town, and then we started going out for summers, friends.
Tanglewood.
Tanglewood.
Oh,
yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. There's a new movie. Bradley Cooper is starring as Leonard Bernstein, that famous conductor, West Side Story, composer, conductor. He spent a lot of time at Tanglewood. I was just listening to the radio talking about the movie and the amount of time that they spent at Tanglewood.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Well, and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Need we say more?
We love you, Bradley. He's a big fan of our podcast. Should we talk about daylight savings?
Sure.
Suzanne, can you do anything
get rid of it?
To get rid of it. This is Meredith's pet peeve.
I hate this.
It's so changing time is terrible.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense. No, and scientists say it's not good for us.
No, not at all. I mean, data proves it that it's not good for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not good economically, and it's not good for our health.
Well, right. Suzanne, can you do anything?
Not about that.
I mean, I just don't understand why Arizona did it. Why we just, and some people say, well, we got to be on Atlantic time or this time or that time. And I don't really care. It just stopped changing time twice a year.
I know. It really does have to be done across the country. Yeah. I mean, I can understand why Massachusetts doesn't do it alone, because we are so connected, well, to the whole of the East Coast,
right?
To New York and to Washington. Yeah. And, you know, and with the importance of the Northeast, you know, and down to the Mid-Atlantic, you know, to the rest of the nation and to the economy, we can't do it. Massachusetts can't do it on its own.
I've been told that the northern states will follow us in a heartbeat. If we can just get Connecticut and New York to do it, then we'd be good.
But well, New York.
I don't know enough New about York. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, why would New York want to still do it? I don't get it. I guess they have their agriculture.
I don't know. I have not looked into it. I just complain about it.
We love complaining about it. I mean, by 2 and 3 o'clock, we're dead in the afternoon. We need naps. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
No, exactly.
We can't function.
No. There's an increase in car accidents after the time change. I mean, it's wild.
It's bad.
I sat with Senator Kennedy at a function. He said, it is never going away.
Oh, God. Mm. Now, I will say, I did my best to embrace it this year. And I walked starting at 5:30 in the morning, and the light would come up at 5:45. And it did make me feel better to just do that rather than, you know, waking a little bit later and just kind of power through it. So,
well, that's a remedy I'm never going to try.
Okay.
Yeah, I can assure you. 5:45.
You don't get up at 5:30, Suzanne? You like to sleep a little bit later?
Yeah.
But you probably are a late person too.
No, I always was tried to be in bed between 10 and 10:30.
Because you're efficient with your work.
I really feel that I need the full 8+ hours of sleep. Mm. So I,
anyone really sleep 8 hours?
I had a good run last night.
You did? I'm jealous. Did
10,
you?
10 to 1. Did you? Up, do my thing. Go back until 5.
Did you use any type of an aid?
I did not. Just water these days.
Okay, I'm taking the 5th on that
one. I think I need an aid.
Yeah.
I was up. Maybe. I was telling Suzanne before you got here, I was up at 3.
And done.
I'm done. I was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're up. Your body's up.
Here we go. So I started watching Netflix. Oh. I do watch.
Oh, but that's really bad for you.
Oh, it's terrible. You're not supposed to put the TV on. Who does that?
No.
And I have books on my phone that I could read, because I can't read a book. It's too dark. I need the light, the whole thing. So I have a lot of books on my phone, but
I don't even sleep with my phone near me anymore. It's on the other side of the bedroom so that I'm not tempted
to pick
it up. So I put it down and then I get into bed and I'm not tempted to, just look at one more thing.
Right.
No.
I know.
No.
Instagram makes me fall back asleep. I don't know if that's because I need a new reading prescription or what it is, but it definitely helps me go back to sleep quickly.
I'll have to get on Instagram before I can to figure out that.
Yes, Adam. Adam's going to be.
No, you being off Instagram is terrible, though. I mean,
I'm barely. I don't even post on Facebook. I kind of sometimes look at feeds. I get emails saying somebody has posted.
I'm jealous.
I don't know that you should get on social media.
I know.
Why?
You really don't need it.
I had this conversation with my 12-year-old. Like, there's no upside for you.
What did he want? Insta?
She wants Snap and be real.
Oh, yeah.
No.
There's no upside for her.
No.
There's only negatives.
No, right. Unfortunately, though, because we've lost our local paper.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with what's going on in town. It is really hard to follow organizations, to see where the performances are, that you know, the concerts,
right?
Where all kinds of activities are. Yeah. Well, even you know what's going on at Langwater Farm.
Yeah. That's true.
You know how
Meredith, bring back the Eastern Journal.
Yeah,
well, yeah, please. You're right. We get it from social media. I post a lot of stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
that's the only way
we need it back.
Know. That's the only way you can
Why did they get rid of it?
Well, because no one was buying it, and, you know, and so therefore nobody's buying it. So the advertisers weren't going to advertise in it. And it was just a death spiral. It's, you know, for all of print media, it's just been a death spiral since, you know, with the advent of social media.
Well, people like sound bites, right? 140 characters. Yeah. Like, they want little pieces. Yeah. And if you want more and you're inquisitive and you want to read more, then fine. But to that point, I guess that is the benefit of social media, right?
Yeah. But, you know, so I think it's really detrimental to community life and certainly to government for people to not know what's going on. Because if you don't know, and if you don't have any way of knowing, you're going to assume the worst, right?
Right.
Because
right.
It's just human nature.
Well, you know, I want to give credit to Connor Reed, our town administrator, because under his leadership, he, and at least this is from my vantage point, we just had a vote for new municipal buildings. Mm-hmm. And the outreach that he did was extraordinary.
It was.
They did it via social media. They did it newspaper. They did direct mail. Yep. He did podcasts. He did interviews. He met with people publicly. I mean, he left no stone unturned.
No. No, that is so. You know, the Board of Selectmen had been working on this really for years.
Yep.
And the Capitol Planning folks had been working on this for years, and it really paid off, you know. But on the other hand, how many people voted?
It won by 60 votes.
Yeah,
but I was one of the jerks who thought I was busy that day, and I was there for the town meeting. It was a landslide vote, and I thought, you know what, it's going to be fine at the vote. I've got so many things going on, so for me to take time out and go do it, and it won by only 60 votes.
Yeah. I didn't realize what the margin was. I was just focused on
2,000, around 2,000.
Small number of people.
Yeah, 2,000-ish.
I've been in and around government all my life. I really believe in it, and I want other people too, and to do so as well. I mean, it's the essence of our country, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
It's
right.
Democracy. And it's such a gift. Why would you not take advantage of that opportunity?
Steph?
Suzanne Bump for president. I vote.
No, thank you.
And you know,
you pass.
Age is not an issue these days.
Oh,
right?
Right. No. Not at all. No. No. So, no, thank you.
Oh, all right. Well, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Suzanne's enjoying her retirement.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, but at any rate, it's great to be in Easton. I'm really happy to be here. I think we are well governed. I think we've got a lot of great people in positions, and just the vibrance of the community, and the focus on kids, not just the sports activities, but the Raising Multicultural Kids organization, the Wings of Hope. Mm-hmm. There are good adults that are really engaged, in really meaningful ways with our kids, and I think that obviously that makes a big difference too.
You know, something that I have noticed though, and I'm not sure it's a fault or truly a defect or not, but most of the downsizers that we work with move out of town.
Mm.
Few are staying. Or moving into town. I mean, we do have 3 over 55 communities, and they don't have a high turnover rate, at least as of the last 4 years, very low turnover.
Yeah.
Would you find that too, Steph?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it's the same with all the towns.
Right.
I mean, where are the downsizers going? They're moving to Florida.
Plymouth is a big place.
They're moving
was a big
to Plymouth.
Place.
They're moving to the water.
A lot of people. Yeah, I guess to the water.
That's what it is. Down
well,
the Cape,
Plymouth too has that real walkability,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the center of town in Easton does.
Yep.
Well, what about that development? What's it called? It's a town within Plymouth.
Oh, Pine Hills.
Yes, Pine Hills.
Right.
It's lovely.
True.
They have their own post office, restaurants.
Yeah. And
that's a great place to be.
There's another one that, is it Red?
Red Mill?
Red Mill?
Oh, in Norton.
In Norton?
No, yeah. This was down in...
Oh, Redbrook.
Redbrook.
Yeah, so that was an extension of Pine Hills.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Plymouth is so vast.
We had other downsizers that moved.
Yeah.
They were in Tanglewood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but they're looking, you see, they want that community feel. In a lot of instances, they're moving from, you know, a home that was on, you know, in a cul-de-sac, you know, in a big house, and they were away from the commercial areas.
Right.
And they want, you know, so they're moving to village settings.
Right.
You know, which is, you know, what I did.
Well, we just went to, we had an amazing tour last week in Milton.
Oh, right.
What was that
Fuller
called?
Fuller Village.
Fuller Village. So it's independent living.
Is that off 138?
Yeah.
Yep.
Blue Hill Ave.
So no assisted living.
It's not progressive.
Oh, really?
Nope. Yeah. It's just an over 62 community, basically like a condo community. There's no services as far as health care.
You can bring in your own people if you want to bring your own people into your place. But the calendar of events.
Amazing. So it's a life lease.
Packed.
So you buy into it completely affordable. I mean, affordable.
Really?
Yes. And you have a life lease. So let's say you pay $500,000 for your unit. You croak and your family gets 90%. So 10% stays
90% back.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
It was lovely. And there's all different levels you can rent.
Yep.
There's the rentals. There's the buy-in. There's the single freestanding.
One bedroom, two bedroom.
Three
bedroom, I think there was one, right? Or two bedroom and a den.
Yeah, two bedroom and a den.
And vibrant. Oh,
I mean, pickleball. I mean, every activity you could possibly
yoga,
want.
Pool, activity, moving, lunches.
They have pickleball and they don't have medical care for all of them.
Yes, yes.
And apparently.
That's not what it is.
That's not what it is.
No, yeah. Just joking. I was aware of it. Existence, but I had no idea what it really was.
I am so impressed. I love that type of living.
Agreed.
To be busy every day.
Yep.
And so one of the doctors there, he's
an aggressive pickleball player. Yes.
I haven't tried pickleball. You know, I hike, I cycle, I kayak.
That's planning.
But I don't.
It's fun. Steph and I took a few lessons. We'll do it again in the spring.
We took it, with the rack.
Yep.
We'll Eastern do it again. Rack. It was fun.
Yeah. Until we got busy and then we couldn't take lessons again. But I want to do, the lessons are good.
Yeah, I like the lessons.
We could do it with Heath too.
Yeah, it's fine.
He'd get mad at us if we don't.
Yeah.
Heath Berkowitz runs pickleball at the
Brown Balone.
Yeah.
He runs the tournament
off of Chestnut Street.
Brown Balone, the tennis club off of Chestnut.
Oh, no.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Been there?
No, I haven't played tennis.
Maybe you should start playing tennis. Yeah.
It's a very strong pickleball community in Easton.
Yes. I see that.
I feel like, is there any town that there isn't a strong pickleball community?
Probably not. It's like the fastest growing sport in America. And the kids are doing it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
What a talent.
These are the things that I bring to the podcast, Suzanne. While Mara's asking all these government questions.
Now, where did you guys run into each other?
Corfinio.
Oh.
Yeah. I hadn't been to Corfinio because every time I try to go to Corfinio, the bar is always packed.
Yeah.
And so my new thing is I sit in the car and I say, Tony, you go in. I call him Anthony. You go in. If there's seats, text me. So that's exactly. So he's like, there's seats. And then I came in and then I was sitting down. I'm like, wait a minute.
I know her.
She's adorable and she looks familiar.
Even though I changed my hair color,
you're still love it.
Stunning. You look so gorgeous.
And I love it.
I mean, yeah.
And the blue frame is so gorgeous.
Yeah, everything about you.
Yeah.
And I said to Mara, Suzanne was in a full suit.
Yes. Yeah. I actually thought about it this morning. I put on a work chair.
What did I?
I don't know.
I must have been coming from someplace. I'm doing a couple of interesting things now in my retirement. So one that is that I'm on the board of the Old Colony Y.
Oh.
You're, obviously we have the Y in Easton, but this is the parent organization. I went on the board there. Vin Materano, who retired as the CEO, asked me to join while I was still auditor. I couldn't join while I was auditor. He understood that. And I met him while we were auditing, actually, the organization.
You meet and friends while you're auditing.
Yeah. Because we audit, I talk about our audits of state government, but we also audit agencies that state government is giving major contracts to. And they're a huge, the Old Colony Y is a huge social services organization, really with a lot of emphasis on, you know, on children, on youth development, and a lot of programs for troubled teens and all. So I really was attracted to the mission, and they got completely clean audits. I audited him twice. That rarely happens that we audit a private entity. There's usually some way that they're not following some rule. And we spend a lot of time on their finances. Completely clean audits. Developed a relationship through that. So he asked me to join. So that's an exciting thing that I'm involved with. But I'm also doing this really fun thing right now with the Massachusetts College of Art and Design, which is a state school. I think it's the only one in the country that is a state supported school for for art and design. And I'm on the foundation board. Not the governing board, but the foundation board, which raises money for scholarships for kids to go there. And our big fundraising event is an annual art auction in the spring. So right now we are going through art that has been submitted by artists who want their work to be featured in the auction.
Oh, how fun. So you get to pick?
Yes.
Sorry, honey. Go back to the drawing board.
So we have over 1,200 submissions. We have to whittle it down to 300.
Wow. Is there a theme or?
No, it's, but it's modern art. Yep. It's a whole wide range of painting and print and mixed media and sculpture and
It is so
much fun. I'm learning a lot. I'm using, a different part of my brain than I had professionally.
Right.
And it's really great. So I'm having a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun with that. Yeah. Great people. Great school with a great mission. So much more opportunity. It's not just, the old masters, painting with it.
Right.
There's so many ways that technology is involved now, with laser cutting and just so many other kinds of materials that you can use. It's really cool.
It's really incredible.
A lot of career opportunity there is, I guess, what I bet. And the design part, graphic design, every business is looking for graphic designers, whether it's, just to create your logo for your business or all of your communication tools and the like, so it's really that's really fun. Gets me in town every once in a while too.
Yeah. Is that like once a month or once every couple months or?
Well, right now it's once every couple of weeks. The traffic.
Yeah.
Should you take public transportation?
I could take the train to South Station. Or no, I could take the train and get off at Ruggles and walk to the school.
Sounds like a lot.
Maybe we should introduce her to Darren.
Darren, our driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he an Uber driver?
Meredith, you're right. You need a driver.
Yeah.
It's twice a month. You need a driver.
I could have had a driver when I was auditor, but I'm such a little control freak.
I get that.
I could drive with my husband without any problem, but that I live alone and it's been 7 years.
You're in the driver's seat.
It's really hard.
I get it.
Yeah.
It is
lovely.
It is so lovely. Just kick back.
I can appreciate it.
And you don't have to deal with the stress of the traffic. He takes
you in.
No, you
can be productive. And actually, I have.
Maybe you'll try it once.
I mean, even just to go to Logan and come home.
Maybe we'll give you a gift certificate to Darren
yes.
for being on the show.
He comes, he tells you, he texts you and says, I'll be at your, because he has your itinerary, I'll be at your place at 6:32. And he's there at 6:32, loads you up, drops you off where you need to be. And then on the return, he's watching your flight, make sure it's on time. This is where you need to go. Don't forget, you go up the escalator, down the elevator, over here, and I'll be waiting for you. You hop in the car, and then he drops you off at your front door.
And he has a big, comfortable truck. So.
It'd be nice to have people again. I miss a scheduler.
Yes.
I really, from my office life, I miss having IT people.
Right.
And I miss my scheduler.
I bet.
Well, we're going to hook you up with both of those. But now we have to go.
Oh, yeah.
We have run out of time.
Well, this was fun.
Oh, thank you.
We had some laughs. This was amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed it. And it's great to see you both again.
Yeah.
And thank you for finding me that home.
Oh, so Suzanne.
Yeah.
And take Ace. That's her nickname.
Yes.
Ace.
Meredith's mother.
On the kayak.
Oh, okay. I will.
Yeah. All right.
Let her know. She's
we got to go.
Oh, we got to go.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. Thank you.